Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 5 of the Mere Christianity Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Farian. Joining me tonight on the phone via new audio technology, Mr. Brandon P. Stacy and Byron Ellis. What's going on tonight, guys?
What up, dude?
Doing good, man. Doing really good.
So Byron missed last week's episode a little bit, went into overtime, and I will say that I'm very pleased with the feedback that we've gotten from the podcast. I know I told Brandon and Byron a little bit about it, but a lady at our church who's pretty new to our care group came in, and after our class that I'm currently teaching, or I shouldn't even say teaching, more just leading a discussion on Mere Christianity as we've been going through it for the last 11 weeks, getting ready to finish up this week, came up to me after the class and said that she didn't realized that Christians could befriend homosexuals, and she kind of gave me a little backstory of her own, where she's pretty new to the church and had some has a couple brothers who are identify as homosexuals, as well as a cousin, and just gave really good feedback that she really appreciated the open and honest discussion from Christians that, you know, we're not called to hate all homosexuals, that we're called to love them and treat them no differently than anyone else, but also present them with the truth, with grace and love. And so got a lot of good feedback on the podcast. We had quite a few downloads, and I'm pleased to say that it looks like everyone that downloaded the first episode were able to download the final thoughts as well. So it was a little bit of a heavy topic last week. We went over the time, but it was one that I enjoyed taping, and we've got pretty good feedback on. Brandon, did you get any feedback from any of your friends or anyone who had a chance to listen to the podcast?
Well, I've got some personal feedback. I'd realized that there's at least three things that I do way too much on the podcast. And the first one is say everything in my professional as seen on TV voice. The second one,
that's how you talk in real life. Yeah,
that is kind of how I talk in real life. The second, I don't know if there's a second one. I guess that my only reference for news is my own social media feed. That I reference my own Facebook and Twitter and social media account every time I pretty much talked about anything.
But those are the perils of not actually having television in your home. So
yeah,
like they only, the only news source you get is either from a social media or me. And so,
yeah, when this podcast comes on, I only know what's happening because I log into Facebook.
So it was a good episode last week, and something pretty wild happened this past week as far as our church that that I still attend. Now, at different times, the three of us have all attended the same church, but I don't know if actually all three of us have ever attended at the same time. There's been times that I've been there and Byron's been there, and there's probably times that Brandon's been there and Byron's been there, but I'm not sure that all three of us
have been
there.
There was a time when we were all in, like, elementary school that we went together, because Brandon was in, like, first grade, I was in third. And so we were all kind of
And then you were
around.
Like a graduating senior.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably so. So I'm revealing our ages there. But
I
so
remember,
anyway.
What did you do? You pooped in your shoe, Brandon? What was it?
No. I broke my collarbone in community in third grade. Yeah, and then Byron ran Jonathan Kellis's face into a glass door and knocked his front teeth out.
I thought you pooped in your shoe or something. I don't know why. That was a thing.
I'm sure I did. I don't know if I did it at church.
All
I
right,
found a frog in my shoe at school. I put my foot into my shoe and couldn't figure out what it was. That's led to a lifetime terrifying of frogs. I hate frogs. I'm terrified of them, deathly afraid of frogs. Not healthy, but it's what I struggle with. It's one of my struggles that I didn't ask for. But anyways, so this week, Wednesday night, I guess I'm in our care group following my class at community church, and one of our care group members who was helping in the cafe came into the class and told us that our pastor and his family are in Honduras for a week before they had a mission trip where the rest of the church mission team was going to meet them down there. They wanted to take a week vacation on the island of Roatan off the coast of Honduras. And their son, who's 18 years old, just graduated from high school around here, and Mr. Aaron Rose, decided to go for a kayak ride. And the news that we got was that he had went out to see the sunset, that he had gone missing, that it was now dark, and he had not returned. Obviously, in a foreign country, at nighttime on the sea, can be a little scary, 18-year-old out lost at sea. So people, understandably, kind of started freaking out. And just a little background on myself, I'm a very pessimistic person. I'm not the kind of person who will tell someone, oh, everything will be okay, it'll all work out in the end. I don't like to say things like that. I'm not the optimist, I guess. So, but the funny thing was, as soon as I heard someone say that, the first thing I said was, oh, he'll be fine. And somebody says, why are you saying that? And I was like, I don't know why I said that. That doesn't sound like me at all. I'm very pessimistic. But I did have, you know, sounds like revisionist history now because the story's over, but I did have a truly unexplainable peace kind of come over me about the whole thing, and I felt very calm. One of the other members of the church there had asked if people wanted to stay and start praying for this kid's safe return, for the people to find him. And, you know, the principal of the school, because our church has a school there as well, she comes in, she's crying. And I remember going up to her and saying, you know, no tears. We don't know what's happened yet, so let's not act like it's the worst thing. And, you know, I really felt like this pillar of strength for some reason that is totally not like me. That's not what I do, give people false hope. But I clearly had no knowledge that he was going to be okay. But I did have this just tremendous sense of almost a supernatural peace about the whole thing. We ended up staying up to the church till about 2 o'clock that morning, and we were told that the search had been called off because the weather was too bad to continue the search that night. And, of course, everybody really started to have a lot of apprehension at that point. Byron, I'm going to start with you. I'm not sure when you found out about Aaron Rose being missing. Did you find out that Wednesday night, or did you find out the following Thursday?
I found out Wednesday night right before I went to bed. Brandon texted me. I had just gotten home, and I was laying down in bed, and Brandon was like, dude, what a bummer. I was like, what are you talking about? I don't think he said that. It was probably something more serious, but it was probably in his, like, at scene on TV radio voice. But he was like, dude, praying, you know. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, about Aaron. I was like, I have no clue. And so I hopped on, you know, my Facebook and saw all of that stuff. And I was like, you know what? Like, at first I didn't think much of it because I figured everything was delayed, you know. And I was like, well, I mean, sure, I'm sure he got back or whatever. But when I woke up that morning and it was everywhere, like crazy, I was pretty freaked out and just, you know, sick to my stomach, dropped my wife off at work in the morning and just went home and started praying. And just started, like, praying and retweeting and sharing everything I could. And that's when I got connected with you and all that stuff. And so, yeah, it was pretty intense moment, you know. And not, again, like what you're saying, you know, don't be a pessimist or don't hold out. My cousin, Dustin Brack, from the same church, for some reason it reminded me of this. And whenever I was, you know, whenever I was a kid, I was probably 13, the whole church went on a ski trip. And my cousin Dustin's the children's pastor's son, and he ended up hitting a tree while skiing and died. And I remember during that time, it was years before they went on another trip afterwards. And for some reason, that just jumped right back in my mind, like, almost instantly. And I had a sense of fear. I did. I really did. And so Jared, I didn't have that same, like, okay, yeah, it was a sense of fear. And, so I just prayed and prayed and prayed and tried to get everybody I could to pray as well.
Yeah. And Brandon, I think I actually text you, just knowing that, you know, you were a member of this church for such a long time, and I wasn't sure if you had heard. So pretty much within an hour or so after me hearing, I know I text you, and, your first response to me was, at least, you know, your stomach just kind of sank. It's kind of a strange thing to kind of get sent, I guess, at, you know, 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night that someone's missing at sea.
Yeah. I can't remember if I found out, I guess it was just from you texting me. I feel like, looking back, I think maybe as soon as you had texted me, maybe I guess I got online or something to see what was going on. I don't really remember the order of events. But, yeah, man, as soon as I saw it on my phone that what had happened, my stomach just sank. I just got sick, and which is kind of weird because, like you said, you know, I haven't attended that church in a long time. That's not my home church, but I did develop a lot of relationships with tons of people there, and I still remain good friends with a lot of people there. And Aaron actually graduated with my younger sister this year from high school as well. So, you know, it still felt like, something close to home. It still felt like, you know, it happened to somebody really close to me, somebody that I knew really well, even though Aaron's a little bit younger than I am. But I think the first thing I did actually was text my mom because I knew my mom would pray for sure, like instantly.
Our mom's awesome.
Yeah. So I called my mom or texted my mom and asked her if she knew what happened, and she hadn't. So she started praying immediately. She started sending people text messages. And then I called my pastor, who didn't pick up the phone, which I can't blame him. It was 10 o'clock at night. But for some reason, I felt like I should call him and just and bother him in the middle of the night. But, I mean, yeah, sure enough, I mean, next thing I know, you know, first thing in the morning, it's all over Facebook, all over the news, you know, that's getting shared thousands and thousands of times. So it's kind of crazy. It turned into a national thing, honestly, you know, the ABC News and Daily Mail, COUK, and, I mean, it was Good Morning America. It was a pretty big deal.
Yes, it was a very big deal. And so the next morning, you know, we get up, which is strange. You know, I don't usually, you know, and we may get into some areas here where people may disagree with. I don't usually dream prophetically or anything like that. But I do remember that night having lots of dreams. I don't think that night I do remember just dreaming of seeing Facebook pictures of him hugging his parents, you know, kind of confirmation of just this peace I had inside of me, and woke up the next morning and, you know, woke up about 5 and, you know, checked the Facebook and nobody had still seen him. People were still up all night long praying for this kid. Woke up again at 6 and at 7, went to work, still no news. You know, his dad was making posts. They had pictures of his parents sitting on the beach looking out to sea. They had waited for the daylight to come. They were going to try to start a search by air. Their concern was that he may have drifted all the way to Belize with the outlying currents and different things, that he could have gotten pretty far, this little island off the coast. And it was probably, I would say, 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. His dad put a post on there saying that, you know, I know my son has saw the same sunrise as me this morning, and I don't need to, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something to the effect of, you know, he didn't need to worry about where his son was, because, you know, our Father in heaven knew exactly where he was. And just a really encouraging post, probably in a moment of tremendous doubt and fear from a father, but just really, and I don't think he was comforting himself, because what I know of our pastor, he's a little bit of a pessimist himself, and so I don't think he was trying to convince himself that everything was going to be okay. I think he was genuinely sharing his trust in the Lord, that no matter what happened, he knew that, you know, God was with his son. And it probably wasn't 30 seconds later that he posted a message that said, thank the Lord they found him. And they did find him 18 miles off the coast of the island that he was on, 25 miles off the coast of Honduras, in a kayak. And the story was told later that 7 people that they know of had been lost at sea in the kayak like that, and they'd only ever found the kayaks. They'd never found bodies. Aaron was the first person to be found. The first person I called was Brandon, and just to let him know. And I can't even begin to tell you the feeling of elation, the feeling of joy, and that just kind of washed over me. And I don't know the last time I was affected by something. I mean, I know Aaron. I have a relationship with him, but we're not, you know, best buds. We don't go hang out. I see him once or twice a week. He's the son of our pastor, you know. But I was really just blown away at how many people experienced such an emotional reaction to what had happened. And, you know, Brandon, I'm pretty sure I called you. Maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I'm pretty sure I called you. And what was it like when you got the call?
Did he call you?
Jared calls me a lot.
Jared, why don't you ever call me, dude?
I think you're busy. You're playing churches and stuff. Brandon's just reading books.
Well, I'm kind of a little butthurt over here. I mean, you're like first thing I did was call Brandon. I'm just, what am I, chopped liver? I mean, come on. You're like, I talked to you at like, I don't know.
Called Brandon.
I figured you were.
Tonight,
I figured you were in the loop. I know Brandon is not always in the loop. I think that's the difference.
No, you know what? I had ashes on my forehead. I was I was fasting. I had self-flagellation. No, that's not a dirty word, but I was in deep contemplative prayer, you know. And so I understand. I mean, that's the things I do. So Brandon, how did you feel when you got that phone call?
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I don't think I would be in the loop once again unless Jared did call me and keep me updated with what's going on. But
nobody likes you.
Yeah, because I'm too busy reading books. I'm pretty sure you did call me, and I am pretty sure that I found out that he had been found firstly through your phone call when you'd hit me up. And I mean, my reaction was kind of the same, man. I was ecstatic. Like I said, once again, it's kind of strange because. Like I said, me and Aaron aren't close. I mean, he's a senior in high school. I not a senior in high school, and I don't attend community anymore. But just something about the whole story, something about just the connection between myself and the members of that church still, and my family, you know, like I said, my sister being his same age, and I guess just a lot of surrounding situations and circumstances made it feel like it was, like it had happened to someone really close to me. So I was super excited. I did the same thing as when I found out that he had gone missing. I mean, I started calling people, and the first person I called was my mom. So I don't know what Jared's doing. He needs to call his parents.
Have you read any Freud? I mean, like, why did you go back to your mom?
Jared calls me. I call my mom. But, yeah, I mean, I called my mom. I started texting my – there was actually quite a few people from my church that I had texted, some people in our Sunday school class, my friend Jeremy and my friend Michael. I texted them that same night after I texted my pastor, and, you know, they were checking back, getting updates from me, and they were texting people as well from that they knew from the church that would be praying. And so I just think it's kind of interesting, man. You know, I all these different people, different denominations, different churches, different cities, different countries, all these people were coming together – you know, just believing in the power of prayer and believing that Aaron, just having hope that Aaron was still alive and that God was going to just do something awesome. So just the connection between so many different people from so many different places to me was probably the most awesome part of the whole experience.
Yeah, and we're definitely hoping that when Aaron gets home, though, they should be home sometime next week. We're hoping to get Aaron on the podcast to actually tell his story and kind of everything that happened.
Hopefully
I know he's been inundated. Yeah, they'll be back next Sunday. So maybe not next Sunday, but maybe the following Sunday. So maybe 2 weeks. Give them a little chance to kind of decompress a little bit. I know the poor kid checked his phone and had just, you know, thousands upon thousands of notifications and trying to respond to everybody, which obviously isn't possible. But, you know, a very happy ending to the story. Now, Byron, since me or Brandon didn't think to call you, how did you find out? What was kind of your feelings when you had found out that, you know, that the prayers had been answered and Aaron was safe?
I was checking on my Facebook feed, and that's how I found out. And I posted it on a minister's forum that I'm on, and we had a bunch of about 4,000 different other under 40 ministers were all praying and looking into it all. I was doing something, I don't know, but probably wasn't reading a book nor praying, but I was doing something, and somebody had messaged me, and that's how I found out. And so, yeah, I was super it meant a lot to me, because when I got saved, 10 years ago, I was this little, like, punk kid or whatever, and Daniel, his dad, was the associate pastor then, and he took me into his home, and he started doing, like, discipleship with me. I definitely didn't deserve it at all. Aaron and all the rest of the kids were, like, still in, like, elementary or junior high or something. And so I was over at his house all the time and just kind of watching them grow up. And so their family means the world to me. And, you know, Pastor Daniel's still, like, a mentor for me and the rest of those kids. The younger boy in the middle age and all the other in my class and stuff at school. And so really, really close to me. And so anything that I could have done, I was there. I took our missional communities and our church over to the prayer night that they had the next day when they found out, the celebration. Got with you, try to share as much, trying to help with the social media for the church to be able to kind of get everybody together for it. And just huge party, and it was just really ecstatic. So it really meant a lot to me, and I was definitely praying really hard, and had a lot of people. A lot of people praying. So, I mean, and it just reminded me so much of that, that one, that God does indeed answer prayers. And two, the way the Father's heart is towards everyone who is lost at sea spiritually when they come home. And when I saw the picture of Daniel and Aaron, it just reminded me of what heaven looks like whenever someone gets saved. And so I kind of in that in missional mindset for it. So that was my big thing that I was posting and excited about too. It's just the way that heaven celebrates when just one person's found.
Yeah, and we, you know, we had a celebration service at the church, and you know, I did have an opportunity to stand up and kind of address everyone that was there. Byron, I know you were there. I don't know if you were in there for that, but I was just able to kind of talk a little bit.
But I mean.
My stage presence?
yeah.
Let's save the criticisms for after the podcast. But we were talking about the book, What's So Amazing About Grace by Yancey, where he talks about sometimes the joy of the rediscovery of what was lost is often greater than the first day you got the item to begin with. And there was a lot of parallels to that. You know, he talked about the three parables that Jesus tells, the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the lost sheep, and the prodigal sons. Where he talks about, you know, all three things that were lost and the joy celebration that came. And we had all kind of experienced that with his parents, you know, the heartache of the loss that came Wednesday night, and then the thrill of the rediscovery early Thursday morning. And then, you know, I tried to help people to come to a joyous celebration, which is the third part of the story. And it did remind me of that a lot, Byron, of that whole idea that, you know, when we are born into this world of sin, you know, we are separated from Christ and we are, in a sense, lost. And then there comes the point where, you know, we are found and we are reunited with our Father. And then there's this, the, like you said, the joyous celebration. So, you know, I can't remember a time that something happened to another family and I was so moved by it. And I the outpouring of support, you know, we were up at the church at 12:15 and a pastor of a neighboring church comes walking in at 12:15 and just said he wanted to come be with us and pray. You know, for that man to get out of bed, get dressed, drive to our church and be there with us as a member of a completely different congregation. Was just amazing. And, you know, to be able to reach out to Brandon and have his whole church body and then in turn they reach out to people that they knew. And like you say, you know, you start looking at the shares and the likes and the comments that were getting passed around, and it was just absolutely, you know, mind-blowing, all the people that got involved. And it was just really, really cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, the kingdom knows no denominations in that regards. I mean, tragedy is no respecter of philosophy, of theology. And so I think whenever you see that happen, you really give what the kingdom of God truly looks like. And so we all kind of come together for that, a huge ecumenical gathering in prayer. And in that moment, I mean, it didn't matter whether you're Assemblies of God or Baptist or Nazarene or Presbyterian or whatever. I mean, in that moment, we were Christians. In that moment, we were brothers and sisters. In that moment, we were citizens of the kingdom praying for our brother and our brothers and our family. And that was truly a powerful thing. And people that I don't even know if we're walking with Jesus, they were reaching out and it reminded them of their eternal state as well. Seeing the body of Christ cross-denominationally, ecumenically come together for something that powerful literally transformed the city. If not for a life or for a month, for a day, it reminded us that our differences in denominations or church growth structures and strategies could all just go to hell because our brother was lost and now he's found, you know, and that was a powerful, powerful thing. And I hope to see that carry on into the future of what the church looks like here in our city, and to see us just say like, hey, why does this have to stop? Like, there are people lost all the time, and we are the search and rescue team as the church, you know. And so I think it's a powerful thing moving forward if we just got to capture that missional mindset and not hide in our holy huddles.
It was very, very encouraging for sure. Brandon, any final thoughts before we move on to our favorite Bible stories tonight?
No, I just resonate honestly with what Byron said, you know. Community being a, you know, Assemblies of God church, and me leaving that denomination, leaving that church, and now as a Baptist and as a Reformed or Deformed Baptist, you know, it's like you said, you know, it just didn't matter at that moment. You know, I didn't go through my phone and say, I can't call that guy, I can't text that person. You know, they're an Assemblies of God or they're non-denominational or whatever. You know, I didn't type in, you know, Baptist in my contacts list and try to find out who all my Baptist friends were before I, you know, sent out text messages and phone calls. Because like you said, you know, that just, it just didn't matter at that moment. And like he said earlier too, you know, it's just the way that heaven celebrates when one sinner repents, you know, it's, we come together and it's a celebration that was, you know, He who was dead is alive, he who was lost is found, you know, just like Luke 15, you know, the lost coin and the parable of the prodigal son and the lost sheep. It just all just points to a greater reality, like Byron said. So
thanks for that, Brandon.
All right, well, we'll move on quickly. We're going to start with Byron. He drew the short stick, and he gets to start with his favorite Bible story. The reason I wanted to do this tonight was just to sort of have an idea of... No, you can take that. But the idea was that we wanted to do something that was a little more light in topic after kind of dealing with something a little heavier last week. So I just wanted to kind of share some of our favorite stories. So we're going to start with you, Byron. Favorite story, Old Testament or New, the choice is yours, and we look forward to hearing it.
Hey, just because I'm terrible at doing this, how much time do we got left?
We got 20 minutes.
20 minutes. All right. So, favorite Bible story. My favorite Bible story is in the book of Mark, right? All right. So, I don't know how I came across this, but there's this little portion in the book of Mark when Jesus is getting arrested, right? And I don't even have my Bible in front of me. I'm such a heathen. So, this little portion where Jesus is getting arrested, the guards grab him, and they turn and they look at this young man, and they go and grab this young man, and they grab his coat, and he shimmies out of his coat, and he turns and he runs away naked, right? And so I always thought that was just so it was just so funny that this is of the epitome of all of the scripture. Like when the whole purpose of the Bible is about Jesus. I mean, from the first page and the table of contents to the maps in the back, it's all about Jesus. And so you're working through 6,000 years of literature and history of God's people and their movements, and you're moving all the way forward. And the culmination when they grab him, and they turn back around and they grab this young man and they pull off his jacket, and it says he runs away. Here in Mark 14:51, a young man wearing nothing but a linen garment. Dude was like freeballing it under there, right? And so he was wearing nothing but a linen garment, was following Jesus when they seized him, but he fled naked, leaving his garment behind. And I just want to be that kind of Christian who leaves everything behind and just runs away from Jesus. No. But what I find is so amazing about that, like the culmination of everything in the Bible, there's this little piece of humanity right in the middle. And what it shows us is that Jesus is the hero and that we run away naked and afraid. It brings me back to the first garden whenever after their sin, whenever God shows up and they're hiding in the garden naked and ashamed. And so Mark's the one who, that's Mark. Mark wrote himself into the Bible. So that goes to show me, and I'll take the apologetic approach to this, that goes to show me that we are not like some automatons that when we got the scripture for mechanical writing, God didn't take over men's bodies and have them write exactly what it was. He didn't subvert their will or their intellect. He used their stories to tell his story. And to me, that means so much because God still allows for our own personalities, our own like flair, our own like swag or lack of, like Mark as he ran away naked. But I mean, and so to me, it points to that Jesus is the hero, and no other Bible or no other sacred writings or books has the authors running away from God. No other has the authors where they're not the heroes of the story. It's always, you know, they did something absolutely amazing. But throughout the scripture, over and over again, it's how people just keep failing and failing and failing and failing, but Jesus keeps saving and saving and saving and saving. And to me, that's why it's my favorite, my favorite passage in the scriptures, is because it points out Jesus's divinity and our humanity, and how at that place in the garden they collide. And it reminds me, it just brings me so much hope, I guess, and especially in the apologetic of it, saying that like it gives good eyewitness reports, and so it can be backed up and claimed as verified. What do you think?
Well, I think a lot. I think it's a very great take.
I think Jared's probably thinking right now.
No, definitely not. We will We've only got 15 minutes, so I'll have to actually save my thoughts because I'm going to try to get through mine in 5 minutes. Byron was perfect on his time, ended in 5 minutes, so I'm going to try to do the same. So one year when I was off studying the Bible with a lot of other, you know, really exciting people, this guy walks into our class to teach for the week, and I really apologize. I don't remember his name. I did not take very good notes back in the day. I just kind of thought everybody was there for my own personal amusement, I guess, and I thought I was just going to remember everything. You know, just because I was so intelligent or something, so I didn't really take very good notes. But Byron, I think he said a couple of weeks ago, like we were talking about something, and he said, you know, Jesus always told stories, and those stories stick with people. You know, people remember those things, and there's a reason why he talks like that. And so this guy tells a story, and I forget the guy, and I always remember the story. But he tells a story about feeling like the Lord was calling him to go to India. He had some bad news, bad feedback in y'all's life. I'm not sure where that's coming from. Anyway, so this guy tells a story about that he feels like the Lord wants him to go on a missions trip to India. Tells him to pack his bags and go to the airport. So the guy, I don't think it was the same day or whatever, but at some point he packs his bags, he goes to the airport to go to India. He's in Atlanta or somewhere like that. He finds out that there is a flight leaving to go to India. So he gets in line to go up to the desk to go to get on this plane. And he waits in line. He gets up to the window there, and the lady asks him if he has a ticket. He says, "No, I believe you have a ticket for me." She says, "Okay, what's your name?" And she tells him his name. He types it in, and she says, "I don't have any ticket here for you. Did you purchase a ticket?" And he says, "No, but I believe I'm supposed to be on this flight." She said, "Okay, well, you still need to have a ticket." And they kind of had this little thing back and forth, and she eventually told him he had to get out of line or produce a ticket, which he couldn't do, so he went and sat down. He felt a little dejected, making eye contact with the guy across the airport. The guy kind of keeps looking at him. He said there wasn't a lot of people in the area. Guy kind of keeps looking at him. Finally, the guy comes over to him. He says, "I'm sorry, man. I hate to bother you, but could you tell me what time it is?" And the guy dejectedly kind of looks at his watch, tells the guy what time it is. He was thinking this was the guy. Ends up they're having last call for the flight. It's time for the flight to leave. The flight ends up leaving. The guy is just dejected that he felt like, you know, that he was being obedient to the Lord and packed his bag without a ticket and went to the airport in faith and was going to be in India on this missions assignment or whatever. So totally dejected, watches the flight fly away from the airport, doesn't know what he's going to do. Before he leaves the airport, he decides to go to the bathroom, walks into the bathroom, uses the restroom, comes out of the bathroom, and is instantly in India. Now, everyone can make their own judgments about what they want about the story. When I first heard it, I said, the guy's an idiot. You know, this is never going to happen. This is my pessimistic, skeptic side coming out. And I said, you know, I can't find it hard to believe when people tell me stories about stuff that's not in the Bible. And they said, well, that story is in the Bible. I said, where in the Bible did some guy need to go to India and miss a plane flight and teleport from one continent to another? And they pointed me to Acts chapter 8, the story of Philip and the Ethiopian. Starts in verse 26, and I'm not going to read all of that, but we'll start in verse 36 of Acts chapter 8. It says, "They traveled along the road. They came to some water, and the eunuch said to Philip, 'Look, here's water. Why shouldn't I be baptized?' And he gave orders to stop the chariot. Then both Philip and the eunuch went down into the water, and Philip baptized him. When they came up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord suddenly took Philip away, and the eunuch did not see him again, but went on his way rejoicing. Philip, however, appeared at Azotus and traveled about preaching the gospel in all the towns until he reached Caesarea." So there we have Star Trek style, and I'm a sucker for sci-fi and time travel anyways, so hence my favorite story in the Bible involves the act of teleportation. I tell you the first story not to have everyone be critical and say that that's impossible or start a huge debate. I tell you that first story in the sense that that's what brought me to the story in the Bible in Acts, something I feel like I had possibly read over without realizing exactly what happened there, the fact that when they came up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord took Philip away, and the eunuch did not even see him again. So very cool story for me out of Acts because, like I said, I am a huge sci-fi nerd, and so that was my favorite story. We have about 12 minutes to go, so I think I got in about four to five minutes. So, Brandon, your turn.
Yeah, so I'm going to shoot for 3 minutes. Since when I shoot for five, I go for like 12.
Brandon, you're already taking 10 minutes to do this. Just hurry up.
I'm going to cheat and go with two Bible stories, but
3 minutes.
I'm going to go 2.5 minutes each. Okay, I guess 2 minutes each now.
Just go.
They're related. Okay, so my first favorite Bible story is in the very beginning of the book of Isaiah, chapter 6, where Isaiah is taken into the throne room of the Lord. That story, and there's a second one that, before I go into it, is in the beginning of Luke, chapter 5, where Peter and James and John go out fishing with Jesus. which that actually is the passage when I got my when I was licensed into ministry, I preached over this beginning passage in Luke 5. But basically, and you know, and I'm sure we all know the beginning of the story in Isaiah chapter 6. You know, it starts out in the year the king Uzziah died. I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple, and above him stood the seraphim. It goes into the description of the angels. And one called to another and says, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." And it says that the foundations of the thresholds shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, "Woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." And then you see this beautiful picture where one of the seraphim flies over and picks up a coal from the altar and touches Isaiah on the mouth. And he tells him that, "Behold, this has touched your lips, your guilt is taken away, and your sin is atoned for." And so we just see this picture of God's holiness and what happens when somebody comes into God's presence, when we come into God's presence as unholy, as unclean, as unrighteous. Our first cry, our first response is, it's not even awe in the sense that God is great or God is mighty. It's a sense of, it's woe is me, it's I'm wretched, I'm a sinner, I mean, basically, you know, Isaiah, the prophet of woes, you know, he's pronouncing a woe upon himself, and he's saying that that he's torn in two, that he's ripped to shreds, he's torn to pieces in God's presence because of his sinfulness. And the interesting thing to me about that passage is it's the way it relates to this passage in Luke chapter 5. You know, they're going out to fish. Jesus is going to teach Peter and them how to fish, which is kind of ironic because he's a carpenter. And Peter, as you read the story, he's not really having it. He's kind of frustrated when Jesus is telling them, you know, to throw out their nets. You know, Peter, you know, we've been fishing all night. We haven't caught anything. But Jesus is going to teach them a lesson. He's going to show them something. And so he gets them to throw out their net. And what they do, you know, they bring in so many fish that their boats begin to sink. And while some of the disciples are probably reacting in, you know, excitement and you know, just elated that they're about to, you know, have bring in this huge catch, this huge amount of fish, Peter says that he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Depart from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." And so what we see here is the same reaction that Isaiah had in the throne room of God, that Jesus, when he did this, when he performed this miracle in front of the disciples, it revealed his character as God, as divine, as God in the flesh. And when Peter recognized that, when he recognized the holiness of God in Jesus Christ through the performance of this miracle, his first response was, "Woe is me," was, "Lord, I'm a sinner, Lord, depart from me." And so those, there's a good book, a really good book by R.C. Sproul called The Holiness of God that was really influential for me. But just reading that and the story, I mean, you can go into stories like Martin Luther, you know, when he almost was struck by lightning and things like that. Just when we're presented with this, with the power and the might of God in our smallness and our wretchedness before him, you know, it's powerful. And so that's something I go back to frequently, and I read those stories, and it just humbles me and makes me remember that, you know, the only reason that we can approach the throne room of grace is because of Jesus' blood shed for us. So
Byron was being silly, I was being nerdy, and Brandon's being super spiritual. That's pretty much sums up
Brandon,
the three of us in a nutshell.
Brandon, way to take the Pentecostal's favorite Bible verse and make it Baptist. I like it. It's good. I like it. So, all right, what's next on the agenda?
Well, that's actually where everybody did very well tonight. I think sending a structured, detailed list out actually worked pretty good. We've got 5 minutes. I was going to ask, maybe like do a quick.
Can I say something real quick?
Get close enough to the microphone, you're more than welcome to.
All right. First of all, I got two things to ask. Well, one thing really. Hey. all you merely Christians or meerkats, my meerkats, what's up? All right, check this out. Hey, go right now to your favorite whatever it is on social media and just follow Redemption BMT. All right, we're going public with our church plant.
Did you say BLT?
BMT, Redemption BMT. We're going public with our church plant on next week, and I need as much support as possible. So go ahead and do that and kind of spread the love on that. Second of all, I want to talk about the most important apologetic known to man, and to me, that is food, all right? So I love food, and I think it's impossible to hate someone and to, when you're sitting across the table eating a good burrito, right? And so I wanted to share this with you. If you're a Christian and you don't allow someone to sit at a table and eat your burrito with you, then you're not being a good Christian and you're not showing the love of Christ. At Jesus' table, we're all one. If someone invites you to go out to eat with them and you don't save a seat at the table for them, then, hey, you're missing out on the greatest tool to be able to share the love of Jesus with somebody. And so we need to make room for everyone at the table. I say this because this happened to me this week, all right? And I was ticked off. I couldn't eat a shrimp taco, okay? And so I love Jesus. I know that, you know, they love Jesus too, but they sure aren't acting like it. And so if you want to win someone to Jesus, buy them a burrito. That's all I'm saying.
Amen.
And just sit across the table and ask them how their day was and share the love of Jesus and pay for their food and leave a good tip. And I'll tell you, the city will experience revival. The Holy Ghost will fall down and there will be like hot sauce everywhere. It is delicious. All right. So the greatest apologetic known to man, food.
Amen.
All right, well, we now have 4 minutes left. I was going to actually ask, what was Brandon's summer reading program looking like? What tall stack of books? I've been actually scored a $50 Amazon card the other day, and so I'm going to be purchasing some new books. I just actually did get a few new books in, but summer reading, people in the summertime sometimes have more time for reading. So what's a book you would recommend, Brandon, for someone who has been listening to the podcast and wants to dig deeper into something that you've found helpful in the past?
Well, I mean, of course, I would recommend Mere Christianity. I mean, that's, you know, a great classic apologetic book. And not just an apologetic book. I mean, just the story that it tells about C.S. Lewis's own life. And when you read the context of when the book was published, which was actually a few years later after it was recorded on audio, which is how the, you know, the original text was delivered, was through, you know, audio through the radio during wartime in Great Britain. So Mere Christianity is a great book to read over the summer. I'm currently reading a book by Paul Copen, and I can't remember the name of the co-author, but it's called Did God Really Command Genocide? A Look at the Justice of God, that I found pretty interesting, and it's been relevant to me lately with some conversations I've had with other people. I just got in the newest edition of Cambridge's Dictionary of Philosophy, which set me back about $40 for a paperback, and I don't know, about 5 weeks on the waiting list, but I just got that in, and it's pretty awesome. And I'm actually reading through, well, I don't think anyone probably cares, to be honest, but some philosophy, reading through some Immanuel Kant over the summer, some Aristotle, trying to get some of my classic texts read as I get ready for graduate school and putting together my writing sample for my PhD. So that's what I'm doing.
All right. Well, we've got about 60 seconds left. I'm going to go through The Pursuit of God again for like the, I don't know, 50th time, just because I really enjoy that book and just recommend it to someone else and want to be able to discuss it with them if they go through it. Byron, anything interesting in the last 40 seconds we got here tonight, man?
May the Lord bless you and keep you. May his face shine upon you and his all of his goodness and mercy endure forever and countenance. And grace and peace out. Go make some disciples. Tell someone about Jesus. And
share a burrito.
Eat a burrito.
All right. Well, guys, we definitely appreciate everyone tuning in. And if you have ideas for future episodes, let us know. And we shall be back next week. Everyone have a good week. And hopefully within 2 weeks, we'll have Mr. Aaron Rose on the podcast to share his story of what it was like to spend 18 hours on the open waters in a kayak, something I am not jealous of at all. But until then, you guys take care. Be blessed. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And we'll talk to y'all next week.